In this lecture, I'd like to reflect rather realistically on both the benefits of natural family planning and the challenges that we face if we take seriously the notion that this is something that should be taught and made more widely available. First, as to the benefits, I have quoted the section from Mercedes Wilson's article, which is part of your reading, which was an attempt to document what had already been suspected or observed, but not specifically documented scientifically as early as the 1990s. And that was the basis of the Wall Street Journal article, which was part of the class reading as well. Mercedes Wilson attempted to very specifically and statistically analyze various factors involved in the lives of those who practice natural family planning, and she concluded, as I've highlighted here, and as you read in the article, that people who participate in, people who regularly practice natural family planning, have a dramatically low divorce rate. They are happier and more satisfied in everyday lives. They describe themselves as sharing a deeper intimacy with their spouse, which is undoubtedly part of the reason for the dramatically low divorce rate. They realize a deeper level of communication with their spouse, and they attend church more often and preserve the family unit more responsibly than other groups. So all of those are very positive benefits of natural family planning. One might add to this what I've listed below, that there is no cost once the method has been learned. It can be continued for a lifetime. That it involves, obviously, no drugs or devices. It doesn't alter the woman's fertility or introduce substances with tremendous side effects, as we've looked at and described. It involves greater knowledge for the couple about the woman's body, and as was mentioned just a moment ago, it is tremendously beneficial at the level of interpersonal communication. It involves the need to speak about one's romantic life in an ongoing sort of way so that that becomes part of what one discusses in a way that involves mutuality. And of course, there are the spiritual and theological considerations, particularly highlighted in the theology of the body, in the sense that one is cooperating with, embracing, and as it were, consecrating the experience of one's life in the natural world. One is delighting in, learning about, and sharing in this wonderful phenomenon of a cycle of fertility, rather than trying to dominate, control, and subjugate the same cycle. So, these are among the many benefits of natural family planning, and I'm sure many of you are aware of many more. But let's now move on to the difficulties and the challenges that face those who want to take this approach seriously. Item section 2. We live in the United States in a social context that not only promotes contraception, but one could even go so far as to say that contraception is celebrated. Any study that seems to suggest that contraception is less harmful than was previously thought is reported in a kind of a rejoicing and almost explosive way in the popular media. And a couple of examples of this are listed below, both of them from 2004. The initial evaluations of a rather widespread and comprehensive study, which immediately launched out the news, which turned out to need to be modified because this wasn't accurate, the idea that the pill is good for you. If there's anything that suggests that it's this, it will become headline material in the newspapers, and when it's discovered that it was premature, you will very seldom find any kind of a retraction on the first page. It will be much later that there is a kind of a quiet emendation of the material, as there was with this. There was this notion that the pill is good for you, that not only does the birth control pill not cause increased diseases, but in fact it lowers the risk of certain diseases. This turns out to have been a grotesquely inaccurate interpretation of the data, but nonetheless, this is the kind of thing that finds its way into the popular press, and the later corrections are not to be found. So we live in a culture where contraception is promoted, and anything that that implies that contraception is good or acceptable will be taken very seriously and receive very popular media attention. Item 3, the undeniable fact that contraception is practiced in a very widespread way, even among the Catholic population. The statistic that is often quoted in this election year of 98% of Catholic couples using contraception turns out to be completely inaccurate. It's based upon, a whole variety of inaccurate sampling methods. But it is also based on the kind of questioning that was not whether a person is continuing to use a contraceptive method, but whether the couple had ever used contraception. And so that statistic, although it's quoted again in the political arena, turns out to have relatively little value as far as what's actually going on in parishes. But the truth is, a very large number, and in many if not most parishes, the majority of couples will be using some form of artificial contraception. So one will face a resistance based on people's own experience. Number 4, we live in a culture that, let's be honest, equates skepticism towards authority with wisdom. So if an authority structure, such as the Pope, such as Pope Paul VI, issues a statement on what is proper for the people of God, it becomes heroic. It becomes an appropriate challenge on the part of the people of God to reject that kind of authoritative statement. There's a presumption, as I've highlighted here, that tradition is an obstacle to be overcome rather than a font of wisdom in which to draw, and there is a widespread dismissive attitude towards church teachings concerning the beginning of life and the significance and meaning of human fertility. And there's a very specific skepticism, which I don't think it's too far to say that it verges on contempt for humanae vitae, and many people will claim that it was appropriately rejected by the laity because it is magisterial interference in people's private lives. This is the kind of rhetoric that one often hears, unfortunately, also from clerics, who therefore choose not to even discuss the question of natural family planning or contraception in any context, often including marriage preparation, I'm sorry to say. Again, this is not universal, but I have to say this attitude is widespread in the United States. Number 5, we've mentioned before, there is ignorance concerning the existence of effective and different forms of natural family planning. People still believe that natural family planning is some form of calendar rhythm and that it's therefore ineffective. This is very widely believed, and I have to say it is especially a myth that is believed among Catholic clergy, I would say probably in the more coastal rather than in the rural parts of the United States. And this includes, of course, as we've already mentioned in number 6, doubt which verges on cynicism, and I would go so far as to say disinformation in regard to the scientific reliability of the method. And I've given you an example here of this kind of cynicism and disinformation in some material that is taken directly from the Planned Parenthood website, which claims to be an objective assessment of various forms of family planning. And in it, you have the situation of a woman who is considering natural family planning. She's considering the Creighton method, and she asks whoever Dr. Collins is, an advisor to Planned Parenthood, whether or not this is something that she should consider. I'll invite you to read his discussion on your own. You'll find that it is very directive, that what it aims at is discouraging this person from considering natural family planning. And in the section that I've highlighted, he effectively quotes the statistics for natural family planning that imply that it has only a 78% or 80% effectiveness rate, depending on whether one's looking at Billings and Creighton or symptothermal methods. And he previously has discussed the difference between what I've previously described as method effectiveness and use effectiveness. He here calls them typical use and perfect use. And notice how he arranges his argument. Effectively, he makes it clear by quoting the statistics that favor what he obviously prefers, which is to say contraception, using either pills or IUDs. He attempts to manipulate statistics in such a way as to highlight what he regards as the ineffectiveness of natural family planning. planning while highlighting what he regards as the effectiveness of intrauterine devices and hormonal methods. Now, the statistics that he's quoting, 99.2 to 99.9%, are not actually the correct statistics. He is giving a much higher rate of success in preventing pregnancy to the methods that he wants to advise this person to consider, and effectively dismissing natural family planning by particularly highlighting the use effectiveness, which would include couples who use the method improperly. So this is clearly disinformation in regard to this subject, and it is extremely widespread. Then if we drop down to number 7, the reality in our culture is that periodic abstinence is condemned. People regard this as impossible for human beings. Somehow people cannot control themselves, and therefore that dooms this method to failure, or these methods to failure. And there are even those who will claim that periodic abstinence is in some sense unhealthy. Although, if one looks at the number of days available in natural family planning for intercourse, it's well over 200 days per year, which is quite a lot of time available for sexual activity. But there is a strong bias against anything that involves periodic abstinence in our culture. I would add in number 8, the unwitting complicity of those involved in ministry. I've already highlighted or emphasized this previously, but let me say it again. Those of us involved in ministry, members of the clergy, whether priests, deacons, or educators in the RCIA, or those responsible for marriage preparation courses, are complicit in this disinformation in a variety of ways. Number 1, 8.1, by seldom, if ever, raising the issue because of the fact that we live in a social climate that favors contraception. It may well be that from out of a pastoral motivation, one doesn't want to alienate people who are presumed to be already alienated. And the reality is, if we say nothing, people will presume that nothing needs to be said, that therefore, if they are contracepting, that's perfectly acceptable because we're not saying anything about it. Another issue, number 8.2, this particularly applies obviously to priests and members of religious communities. It's often presumed that as celibates, we have nothing to say, nothing to offer in an area of life as complex and delicate as sexuality within marriage. All of us are obviously the product of a mother and a father, so therefore we certainly have something to say about the experience of family, but there's a real shyness or an unwillingness to speak based on the fact that one's life does not include an experience of marriage. Although, again, there are certainly seminarians who are going through seminary today who are widows or whose marriages have been annulled and who do have that experience, but in general, that's the minority in the Western Church. There is an encouragement I've mentioned in number 8.3 of a real moral relativism by presenting NFP as one choice among many. This is sometimes done in the context of marriage preparation or other teaching, the notion of following one's conscience but not raising the point that conscience needs to be informed by the truth which one may not know about the realities of natural family planning and the side effects and dangers of contraception, as well as the spiritual and theological implications of this, which have been so well highlighted in John Paul II's Theology of the Body. And number 8.4, a point that's often overlooked, sometimes priests and others involved in ministry imagine that simply because they're referring someone to a Catholic physician, this means that the person who's being referred will necessarily hear accurate information concerning NFP. Those of us who have experience of the medical world can assert unequivocally that a very large number, in fact the majority of physicians, are as ignorant as the clergy of the benefits of natural family planning. And just because one happens to be a Catholic physician does not mean that one is necessarily knowledgeable about the truth in regard to NFP. And this means that one needs to be aware of physicians in one's area who are informed. And there are lists in the organizations that teach natural family planning of physician associates, physician affiliates, and In the area of NAPRO technology, Dr. Hilgers, who teaches and heads the Creighton method, has a list of physicians who have gone through his training who are available in the United States and are extremely well trained, particularly in the area of treating infertility. But again, referral to a Catholic physician does not necessarily mean someone who will understand or even be sympathetic towards natural family planning. So what then can one do? In section number 9, how to affect change in a morally ambiguous culture. Just a few suggestions. Item 9.1, we have to ourselves model encouragement, enthusiasm, and conviction concerning NFP. People need to know that there are rational human beings who believe and are capable of studying the statistics and the scientific literature who believe that this is a method that works and can be of benefit. Section 9.2, something we highlighted at the beginning of this course, an awareness and encouragement of a stepwise discovery of and incorporation of these principles according to the law of gradualness. Again, everything involving sexual behavior, but especially in the area of contraception, one has to recognize that for many people this will be a slow process, a willingness to be a companion with them on the part of their confessor to continue offering them absolution and encouragement, even though they fall frequently, even though they find it extremely difficult to move forward. Sometimes this can take years for individuals. The most powerful witness that is offered to the seminarians I teach is by a natural family planning teacher who describes her own story extending over several years from the practice of contraception to a tentative exploration, a finally embracing of, and then learning to be a teacher of NFP. And what was required was a supportive spiritual network, especially including a priest who was willing to be her companion and to encourage her, even though she found herself relapsing very frequently. This is something the church strongly encourages. Again, the principle of gradualness, recognizing that people need to be companion in a journey that may be a slow journey towards improvement. Then, number 9.3, we need to encourage people to study and discover the theology of the body, the spiritual and anthropological and philosophical and theological and spiritual underpinnings of a whole new vision of human sexuality and fertility. The church is not anti-body. The church is not anti-sex. And we need to continue to find new ways of sharing this information. Number 9.4, one needs to be able to share practical information at a variety of different kinds of events, and this means having literature available in the parish office, on tract racks or elsewhere. And here I'm speaking again particularly to those involved in ministry or wherever one commonly counsels persons, and for priests this would certainly include the confessional as well. Number 9.5, this is something I found to be essential and often neglected. Those who discover how valuable this is, and particularly those involved in ministry, must be willing to develop partnerships with NFP teachers whom they trust and in whom they can place confidence. They need to meet with them, to encourage others to meet with them, to provide opportunities for them to present their knowledge and their information, and incorporate NFP into parish education and marriage preparation programs. And this also means supporting by encouraging and even providing one's services as a spiritual director and guide to individuals, because very often people involved in teaching natural family planning have experienced a kind of coldness or have even been rebuffed by Catholic educators and by the clergy. And so for them to discover supportive individuals can make a life-changing kind of supportive experience for them. And it's such an easy thing for those involved in ministry to do. And then finally, number 9.6, those especially involved in ministry and teaching must relinquish their embarrassed silence. They should stop believing that this is an area on which they must not or cannot speak because of a lack of practical experience. This is information that can be shared, that is now widely available with the resources of communication, especially including things like the internet, and information that must be shared.